Greetings, this is Stefko Selasovic. The lecture is Web Searching and the Invisible Web, Finding Things That Are Hard to Find. The central ideas is that web has great many, even indispensable information resources for searching. And many of these are hard to find, sometimes very hard to find, and these that are hard to find are forming what we know as the Invisible Web. Well, in the invisible web, a variety of web resources have to be accessed directly and not through common search engines, and we are exploring that here. The lecture has 54 slides. 12 of those are titles and pictures, so we have 42 slides left. Part 1, Invisible Web, has 9 slides. 2, Invisible Web Searching, 4 slides. 3, General Sources, 4 slides. Domain Sources, 10 slides. 5, Reference Sources and Services, 5 slides, and Digital Libraries, 8 slides. However, the lecture also has some 74, if not more, links. During the lecture, I'm not going to open these links. You should open it on your own. I'll very briefly describe them. Thus, the lecture is going to be relatively short, and it's for you to explore further. So let's go to the first part, the Invisible Web, some of the definition, characteristics, and reason. Well, the World Wide Web, it's a series of interconnected files. It's a very large set of linked documents and other files located on computers connected to the Internet and used to access, manipulate, and download data and programs. That's the definition. And Carter defines the invisible as that is which is hidden from the view, not readily noticed or detected. And the Invisible Web, which is also called sometimes Deep Web, Hidden Web, as opposed to Visible Web or Surface Web. And here is our definition. Invisible Web is the term used to describe all the information available on the World Wide Web that is not found by using general purpose search engine. I think it should be underlined that is not found by using general purpose search engines. So, what is Invisible Web? Materials that general search engines cannot or by design will not include in the collection of web pages. In other words, as I keep stressing that, you cannot find through general search engines. However, the invisible web also contains a vast amount of information resources. Many of these resources are much more authoritative than the stuff that you will find through general search engine. And much of it is of higher quality than the visible web, because on the visible web, the quality becomes the main issue. On the invisible web, many of these resources are specialized, and a number of them are fluid or streaming or real time, so you can't step in the same river twice, and the search engines don't cover that. Much of the invisible web, but not all, much of it is free. And according to estimates, it's many times larger than the visible web. Here are some estimates, and you can find a lot more from CUNY Library site. And they picked up some studies that have been done a while ago, so the numbers are questionable as now. But even the best search engines can access only about 16% of the available information on the web. Therefore, 84% of the information is included, and that is the invisible web. Put it the other way, the size of the invisible web is 500 times larger than the surface web. 95% of the invisible web is publicly accessible information. Not all, but 95. More than half of the invisible web resides in topic-specific databases. Thus, a lot of professional web searching concentrates on the individual web. So we will concentrate on that in this lecture as well. In other words, there is much, much more to the web than Google or Yahoo. I love this term. The James Morris, the dean of the School of Computer Science at Carnegie Mellon University, coined a term which he calls infobesity, and refers to the belief that searching Google for information provides a junk food information diet. Oh, a junk information diet. It's the same as a junk food diet. In other words, infobesity is not concerned about the quality at all. Why do search engines not cover it all? Well, for one, its size. Web is huge. It cannot. They cannot cover it all. The second is economics. The associated cost to cover it all would be huge. And engines support themselves mostly by ads. Some engines have rank and per pay and crawl update per pay. And they provide paid listings first and mostly, so they are just not covering the rest. Technically, it's still a challenge. And no matter how large the search engine how large their capacities, it's still limited. Also, some file formats are hard to cover. Spam, well, by trying to eliminate spam, sometimes search engines also eliminate good stuff. Some style restrictions. Some sites do not add in. For instance, logins are required and the search engines won't go in. And the deep structure, some sites are quite complex. For instance, the site of our class is quite complex. And I noticed that the search engine will pick up part of it, but by no means even a fraction of what we have freely on the web for this class. Well, here is a table from the characteristic of invisible web content, and what they list in the left column is what is not found by standard search engines, and in the right column they give examples. For example, it's not found database contents, examples database such as ERIC, in various formats, PDF, audio, so on, although to some extent Google, for instance, covers PDF. It's not found real-time information, current weather, stock quotations, airline flights, and so on. It's not found for subscription or fee-based services, EBSCOhost, InfoTrack, LexisNexis, Scopus. Sites requiring passwords, such as Blackboard and membership sites. Sites require forms to be filled out, travel directions sites, job hunting sites, and sites with a no-index protocol. You can put a no-index protocol, and these are private sites, so this is not found on general. Well, another aspect about search engine coverage, they are hard. The coverage is hard, even impossible to discern and compare. In addition, there are many national search engines, and they have their own coverage, they have their own orientation and governance. There are many topical or domain search engines, and they have their own coverage geared to subject of interest. But there are also many comprehensive sources that are totally independent of search engines. Some are search engines in specialized or domain, but others are a compilation of evaluated web sources, and we are going to look at them. Let me also make another point, and the point is that we have already explored search engines do differ. There's substantial difference among search engines on coverage, and I say that it's hard to impossible to discern. It is impossible to discern what they cover. And there's a substantial difference how they work, and Search Engine Showdown, which we already looked at, shows you what are those differences. And the last slide in this general topic is be aware. Search engines are not only about search. Yes, search is still their core, but they are in many other businesses built upon search, and these affect what and how searching is for. Search engines are many of them, most of them are corporations and commercial entities, and they have to make money, or at least not use money. And mostly they make money by placing ads and placements. But they provide other services. They sell stuff, they license software, they provide email and messaging services, add-on utilities, desktop search function, toolbars, you name it. Most, but not all of this additional stuff is provided free. However, there is no such thing as free lunch. All this additional stuff is about how search engines can get us to continue to use their services. Okay, let's go to the second part, and let me have a sip. Here are a few points about invisible web searching. The basic approach to invisible searching is to talk and orient yourself toward the user. The first is in determining the best approach is to have a clear idea of what you are seeking. In other words, it needs extensive user modeling. And even if you are doing searching for yourself, You have to think it through. What is it that you are really after? The second point is about resources. And this means limiting your source search to appropriate resources and tools for the particular type of information you're looking for. In other words, know your sources, know to how to find appropriate sources, which is, you know, shades of Johnson's knowledge is of two kind. Advanced searching on the web, it applies to searching of the invisible web as well. So, but advanced searching needs to be adapted for differences. The coverage not specified and vastly different from one source, from one engine to another. In most of these, there is no controlled vocabulary. The output is ranked by unknown methods and criteria of relevance. The building blocks may be indicated by similar pages or more from this site or some such. And some provide cluster to narrow searches, and some have various feature capabilities, specifics to offer. All these aspects that are applicable to advanced searching on the web in general are applicable to the advanced searching of web sources. So, we are going to deal here with five kinds of specialized sources, particularly for the invisible web. One is large scholarly search engines and directories. The second is domain sources, databases. The third one is reference sources. The fourth one is libraries as web sources. And the fifth one is virtual libraries. But before we go to that, here are a few tips or sites that give you tips for web searching, including the invisible kind. University of California has advanced web search, like a tutorial, it's very good to take. Bernie Dodge has four nets for better searching. Search Engines has web search tutorial. Phil Bradley, we already encountered him, has a guide finding information about search engines. And Nancy Blockman, we also encounter him. You can learn a lot from her Google Guide. So, this goes to the general sources, a selection of a few, and there are great many, and we are going to deal with only a few sources for the invisible web. Many of these sources are oriented towards scholarly research and professional, technical, and related information. And these are sources that are mostly not covered by general search engine. Majority of these sources, and this is an extremely important point, are trustworthy. The quality is much higher, and some of these sources are really carefully selected, and quite a few are edited. But the origins of these specialized sources vary widely. We have some commercial, but we have some voluntary, we have government sponsors, we have sources that societies are putting together, university departments and so on, and they are very, very popular in specific disciplines. Here are three general sources that I use quite a bit. InfoMine is a comprehensive virtual library and reference tool for academic and scholarly internet resources, including websites and databases. And it covers a wide range of scholarly resources by field. Cyrus, it is run by Elsevier. It's in conjunction with Scopus and Science Direct, but this one is free. It covers the web, not only journal content, but scientist homepages, courseware, preprint server materials, and so on. Google Scholar, the least favorite of the three for me, has a motto that says, "Stand on the shoulder of giants," which is a very bad version of what Newton and John of Salisbury said much better centuries before. It searches for scholarly articles and resources, but sources are not disclosed, and I have no idea what it covers, and that's one of the reasons why it's the least favorite for me. Here are two other large edited sites, and they are edited, mind you. Open Directory Project, it's a catalog of the web. It's global and it's run by volunteers. Bubble Link belongs to the UK. And it has quite carefully selected internet resources covering all academic subjects. Interestingly, it's organized by the Dewey Decimal System. And here are some scholarly and search engines that are not free at all. So we have Science Direct, and you can find that at Rutgers University Libraries. It has access to full text, and they claim to be the world's largest electronic collection of science, technology, and medicine for full text and bibliographic information, and they may be that, indeed. There are many, many of them that are specific. Here is just one example that you already encountered. It is the ACM Portal, Association for Computing Machinery, Digital Library Guide, and Digital Library and Guide to Computing. So let's now go to a larger part of this lecture, and this is about domain sources. And there is hardly a field without it. And we are going to cover this by different fields. Domain engines usually, that's why they are domain engines, they cover specific subjects and topics. You have them in sciences, in arts, in humanities, to various medias of interest, you name it. And they are an extremely important tool for subject searches, particularly for subject specialists. So if you are going to end, let's say, in the arts history department, and you are going to be searching for arts history, you are going to specialize very much in a number of domain engines that deal with art history. And for art history, there are quite a few. They are very valued by professional searches. They should be valued by you, and you should really learn and specialize in them. The selection in those domains is mostly handpicked rather than by crawlers. They don't use crawlers at all, and they follow given inclusion criteria. Sometimes this inclusion criteria is not fully discernible, but content is more trustworthy than you will find in general search engines. Usually, almost all the time, but usually they are quite well organized. So let's cover a few fields. Here is health. I list six, and there must be dozens and dozens of domain search engines and domain sites. Probably the largest, the largest in the world is the PubMed, the National Library of Medicine, and it covers biomedical literature for Medline and health journals, and it's open to the public. PsychCrawler is American Psychological Association, and it's a web index for psychology. WebMD Health, it's a commercial site, but it gives you very good news and medical information, and it's very qualitatively oriented. RxList, I use that every time a doctor prescribes something to me to look up the drug and get the drug index and all the reactions and actions that I can expect of the particular drug prescription that I have been given. Mayo Clinic Health Oasis provides health advice, and it's at the level of Mayo Clinic, which is one of the best clinics in the world. And finally, here I provide a site which is called Kids Health, which has a site for parents, kids, and teens. Here are three in science. I love Ocean Planet, that is by NASA. It's a presentation of Earth and its vast oceans. ArchiveX is a unique site. It started at Alamos Laboratory, and then it moved to Cornell, and it's an e-print service, pre-print service in the fields of physics, mathematics, computer science, quantitative biology. It changed the fields, these. It's large, it's not reviewed, the contributions by authors, but the comments to the papers come later. Athena Earth Sciences Resources is one of the marvelous examples from National Science Digital Libraries. It's not a search engine, but a large, well-organized directory about earth sciences. Here we go to education, and I list three here. Intuit's free online service providing you with a database of hand-selected web resources for education research. TwinCast is run by Oracle Education Foundation. The one, the part that I really liked is that it shows websites created by students. And again, one comes from UK and is authoritative. All the others are by UK. They are government sponsored. It's a national gateway to internet resources for teaching and research community, and it's called Resource Discovery Network. Okay, here is an area of images, movies, video, internet movie database. It's a treasure trove of music. PicSearch provides you picture searching. BlinkX claims to be the world's largest video engine for videos, search engine for videos. And they said that they have indexed over 32 million hours worth of video footage, and you can get it. Moving Images Collections, it's a collection that was developed in Rutgers, and we at the school participated in that. Now it's in the Library of Congress. The one that I use quite often is PicSearch to find pictures, and some of them included in my lecture. Okay? This is just almost a random selection of myriad of web resources in humanities. Shakespeare and internet search tools and resources is great fun to navigate. Here is one in German, Kirke, the catalog der internet resources für die klassische Philologie aus Erlangen. And as you can hear, I used to speak German. Perse's digital libraries, it's amazing. Place. It's run at Tufts University, and now it started on CDs, now it's online. It covers antiquity to Renaissance, and it's one of the best subject sites on the web. It is the fact of the whole field. I've been on one of the presentations where this was presented, and I was amazed to listen to what they expect now of the newly graduated PhDs in antiquity. Not only that they should know Roman and Greek and Persian or whatever antiquity they're following, they're expecting of them to know computers and handling of computers. So of all the fields that is now asking of its graduates to be knowledgeable and skillful in handling computers, it's antiquity. College of London has a School of Slavonic and East European Studies and includes for country resources such as my own country, Croatia. And I picked another one that deals with humanities and the ancient worlds. Their theme is materials for study of women and gender in the ancient world. In music, Musipedia is absolutely delight. You hum something and it tells you where it comes from. And All Music Guide is resources about musicians, albums, and songs. Governments. University of Michigan Document Center is probably the largest document center of government information in the world, and it covers not only U.S., but it covers all kinds of governments around the world, including United Nations. So if you want government information, United information, this is the place to start, and this is authoritative and well-run. U.S. government official web portal has whatever you want or need from the U.S. government. U.S. State Department has a very, very important portal, and it doesn't deal only with U.S., but it provides you authoritative data about other countries. And FirstGov is the U.S. government official web portal. So we also have sites that do not only provide access, but they provide evaluations. And these have become very, very important and even invaluable sources to do it. The Scout Report that is run at the University of Wisconsin is Librarian's Bibles. Now it has over a decade worth of evaluations of sites that and annotations about website. It is comprehensive. Medical Library Association, click on that, and it'll provide you 10 most useful sites for consumer health. And MLA Guide also has a guide. MLA, Medical Library Association, has a guide for finding and evaluating health information on the web. Web 100 is a commercial one. It claims to do user ranking and evaluation of websites. I'll take it with a grain of salt. And UC Berkeley has a tutorial about evaluating web pages. So there are a number of sites that deal, and here is just an example with evaluated sites. So Here is, of course, a domain resource that you should definitely click on. It's the official Peanut website, and it's called Snoopy. Why not? Okay, the fifth part of the lecture, we are now going look at references, and we will look only at few sources and services. Well, here are some reference trends. Live reference transactions in libraries are falling off dramatically. They are going down the drain. But there are new reference modes that are emerging. There is a chat mode, ask a librarian mode. And a very, very important part, and we will be talking a little bit shortly about it, is cooperative reference among group of libraries. And there are some commercial reference services that are growing strong. As to reference tools, most, if not even all, reference tools migrated to digital form. And many provide free online access. Others are licensed to libraries, and most of these tools are end-user oriented. And they're still important sources for searches. So let's examine a few. Wikipedia, the most popular Wikipedia encyclopedia on the web. It's in many languages, is user-generated, extremely popular. But I also found that, especially when I search for areas that I know something about and that they're specialized, it's uneven. I also read quite a bit about that entries are at times manipulated. So if you should depend on Wikipedia, but check, verify. Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, as the name implies, comes from Stanford, and it's another delight. It's a comprehensive philosophical encyclopedia. It's very authoritative. It's maintained and kept up to date by the top experts in philosophy in the field. Bartleby.com, I don't have a clue how they do it. They put great books online, Harvard Classics, English Usage, Dictionaries, Thesaurus. It's an invaluable, amazing collection. How do they survive commercially? Not a clue. Here is a list, you can't click on it because this is a screenshot, of more than hundreds, I think they have a close to about 1,000 digital reference sources in every possible domain, and I'm just listing two pages you'll find in digital resources and in maps and travel, in mythology, in New Jersey information, in time and calendars, in education, in every kind of encyclopedia, you name it. So what I'm pointing out is that the libraries are, with their electronic holdings, are becoming extremely important sources to search for reference style of questions. Then we have reference services that are commercial. Ask originally was known as Ask Jives, now it's run by Google. It's most popular commercial reference service. Information Please gives Altmanac type of questions. RefDesk provides you access to reference tool. And the newest kid on the block is ChaCha. It's a new service. And it provides you direct answers, something like Twitter's. And it's done by what they call specialists. And I understand some of our own colleagues are involved in this. But there are also cooperative reference and real-time references. The Library of Congress is leading an effort called Question Point for a global network of 24/7 reference networks. So if you ask a question that deals, let's say, for Australia, it will direct you to Australia libraries and you will get answers. Virtual Reference Desk is a compilation of web reference sites, and Iowa State University maintains something called LiveRef. It gives you a registry of real-time digital reference services in all over the place. Okay, the last part of our lecture, and this is the sixth part, although it says here five, so sorry about that. We are talking about libraries and other institutions have web sources. Digital libraries, virtual libraries, museums, and good old books. Libraries have become and are extremely important source for web sources. Rutgers Libraries has a big long-term effort, and you are consulting it almost daily. University of California is a very elaborate effort that is done together with Sun Corporation. And I give it just as one example of another university library. They also maintain LibWeb, which lists something like 7,900 web pages from libraries in 146 countries, so you can start visiting web pages in all over the world. I picked up Bibliothèque Nationale de France and includes virtual exhibitions among the others, and it's another site that is, as a digital library, is a delight to visit and to explore. Now we have libraries that are living, or born on the web and live on the web. Virtual Library is the oldest one. It was, as a matter of fact, started by Tim Berners-Lee, who started the World Wide Web, and is located in Switzerland, USA, and UK, and other countries. And it's good, but it kind of, I think it's kind of getting a bit out of date. Maybe it's too much. The Internet Public Library was started by a course on principles of searching at the University of Michigan some years ago. This is the first public library of and for the Drexel community. It now migrated to Drexel, and it's still a great and authoritative source of web information. Library's Index of the Internet is also now run at Drexel, and is a very popular and comprehensive directory. We already talked about it. And here is an individual effort. Margaret Vale Anderson, she's a librarian in Cortland, New York. It's Upper New York. And she maintains Digital Librarian. It's her choice of the best of the web. And again, it's very useful to look at. So there are virtual libraries that can be accessed to find what is in the invisible web. Now we switch to museums. It's totally amazing how museums took to online, even more so, sometimes more so than digital than libraries. And there is a museum of online museum. It's a delight to explore. The site museums.com has a list of over 1,000 museums, zoos, historical societies, for there you can find what they have stuff. Probably the most impressive museum online is the State Hermitage Museum, and it's in St. Petersburg, Russia. And it was developed with the help of IBM, and it has amazing tours of, among others, it has amazing tours of the goodies in the Hermitage Museum. And here is one that I like. It's the National Museum of Science and Technology called Leonardo da Vinci. And guess where the pictures that are using this lecture came from? Internet Archive, if you never looked at, you should. It's a very large undertaking by Bruce Carl in San Francisco area, in the Presidio there. And he made his money on the, in the, during the web heyday, and then web and then went, and he is running Internet Archive, and among others, he has a Wayback Machine, so you can look at the old version of the web. It's an archive, and for instance, you can look how skills pages look like, and they're kind of sickening when they started. I also look my old pages, and for a reason that I have no idea why, I use a sickening green in my old pages. But the problem is that at that time, skills gave us a different URL, so you can get from my present pages, but in order to get to my old one, you have to know my old URL. Digital books online, big deal. There is a project run by Carnegie Mellon and Internet Archive, the Mellon Book Projects, and they are digitizing books from all over the world. International Children Digital Library has online children from a great many countries. Digital Book Index, it's a meta-index for all the other major e-book sites, along with thousands smaller specialist sites. Google Book Search is the most ambitious digitizing effort in the world, also the most controversial. Many large libraries cooperate, and they finally have reached an agreement with publishers, and they are now connected with OCLC's WordCat, so you can find, when you click there for a book, you can find and put your zip code, you can find what libraries near you have that particular book. Okay? What is needed for web searching? And needed in knowledge and competencies on a variety of web sources and their organizations. Knowledge and competency about search engines, about web search strategies, about search dynamics and feedbacks. And it's also needed in keeping up and up and up. Why? Many reasons, such as there are constant updates, there are constant changes, innovations, there are many domain and subject sites that are coming up, and the fluidity in all these sites is very, very high. So what you need for web searching as professional is knowledge of sources in the area of interest. Search engine knowledge is not enough. And the search engines, as I already pointed out, for specialized and professional searches are not too helpful, and search engines are not too helpful in finding these other sources. Now, you need also to know how to find and use these specialized sources. In addition, you have to apply evaluation of sources, which is a key professional skill. And you have to evaluate the sources and apply standards and criteria, which are aimed at the web, and these are authority, accuracy, currency, objectivity, coverage, persistence, and usability. So here are a few bullet, what needed bullet points, what needed competencies, knowledge of users and use, knowledge of searching, use of technology, adaptability, flexibility, integration with other resources, teaching others, and constant learning and update. Again, keeping up, keeping up, keeping up, and again, keeping up, keeping up, keeping up. As you can see, I had fun making these slides. So here are a few weird slides. SelectSmart.com has all kinds of quizzes. James Dean official website. James Dean in my youth, long, long time ago, was my hero. And I'm not going to talk about dedicated, you should click on that. And there is a live journal, it has blogs and authoring tools, and then many, many pathetic blogs. And here is how to do it. We have information and the World Wide Web, and we pull out the rabbit out of the hat like magicians. Okay, web is still a mystery. And happy webbing. Bye. There are a few images from the invisible web, and I told you the source, and of course there is an image of our favorite, the Mona Lisa.